If you're a fan of older episodes of Sourcecast, specifically where I spent week after week on a specific topic, belaboring certain data points, you're really going to like this week's episode. As the week progressed, and I was thinking of potential topics, the Meltdown and Spectre issues continue to be the headline news. And one of the primary reasons why I'm dedicating yet another episode to these topics is because I think there was some misinformation, or at least some confusing information, about how customers are impacted, what processors are impacted, and also there are some lessons learned about how this information is being shared with other chip makers and software makers, and how these patches should be released. So this week, we are waning from the Spectre's embrace. Man, that was a little poetic, wasn't it? I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is Sourcecast episode 103. Before I get to the main story, I'd like to cover another news topic. No, it will not be acquisitions. Thank you, John Silverwood, for making me feel like acquisition news is played out.
If you've got an issue, here's a tissue.
This other topic that I want to cover is news that IBM may be repurposing tens of thousands of global services employees and potentially eliminating 10,000 global service employees through attrition. If you're a fan of this podcast, or if you've been following the blogs for the last few years, you know that I have an affinity for IBM. I like all the old IT companies. I don't want to see bad things happen to them. And all of us who are in the IT industry, we're always reading about how the old giants are making way for new ones, and eventually even the Facebooks and the Googles of the world, who are dominating today, will disappear at some point in the future. But to counteract that point, I recently watched a video of a Japanese traditional hotel that has been in the same family for thousands upon thousands of years. I'm just trying to give you a sense of why I root for the HPs and the IBMs, and I'd like to see them stick around for another 100 years. That being said, even though IBM has recently gotten some good stock performance in news, and I'm talking within the last 6 or 7 weeks, there's still a lot of concern as to whether or not their artificial intelligence and blockchain business strategies will help offset in the other areas where they're currently losing to other firms. And that's what I'm homing in on. As there's news of IBM repurposing employees to other core business areas, and that they are also further reducing staff, IBM is still attempting to win business in these areas. So as a corporate consumer, when you read articles like that, and you see that they are investing resources in other areas, that makes it infinitely harder for those lines of business that remain to win business. If you know that traditional global business services is not a top priority for IBM, and they are actively diverting resources from those areas, are you going to continue to give them business? Are you going to be willing to include them in RFIs and RFPs? It's been said thousands of times before, this is a tricky transition for IBM and HP and Oracle, and they're all sort of fumbling their way through what the next iteration of the company is going to be. They have to do a better job at level setting expectations from customers. You can't eliminate over 100,000 employees over 5 years and still expect a firm to want to buy your services or think that you're best in class. I'm using IBM as an example, but they're clearly not the only ones doing this. And I'm sure some sales executive or some top IT leadership from these companies are going to listen to my podcast and adjust their strategies. But as someone who's reading this information and making this conclusion, it's something to take into consideration. And I certainly don't think they're giving their poor employees any kind of guidance on how to handle a customer if they ask such a question. On to our main story. Meltdown Part 2. Spectre Part 2. So what happened this week? I want to start with an article from Verge.com written by Russell Brandom. This article starts to detail the efforts that went into hiding the issue. As a refresher, last week I mentioned that Google discovered the initial problem in June of 2017. But over the course of the summer, the people working on this patch started to communicate the information to interested parties. I'm going to cut to the chase. In situations like this, there is a canary in the coal mine. And it's Linux. Linux is open source. And the kernel still has heavy involvement from its originator, Linus Torvalds. This Verge article starts to lay out that Linus was tipped off to make modifications to the Linux kernel. And what apparently happened, a Linux update was released. And then shortly afterwards, a patch was released to address this particular Spectre and Meltdown problem. And it raised a lot of red flags within the open source community. As an FYI, the developers that were working on fixing the problem kept referring to it as a page table isolation issue, a PTI issue. So that's how they were sort of skirting around directly calling it a vulnerability. And as I mentioned last week, there's a reason why companies like Google, when they find a flaw in Intel or Microsoft's code, they wait a little while before it's released to the public, and that's so the companies can work on patches and not tip off hackers to potential exploits. But as you can see, this gets complicated when you're dealing with open source, and also as companies start to spread the information to interested tech parties so they can create patches. By December, university students and researchers started to sniff out the problem and were making inquiries to Intel, so they knew it was only a matter of time before they had to go public, which is why we got the press release last week. But perhaps that was even too soon. Now that the information was public, there was pressure on the company to release a patch, which they did, and they're full of problems. According to the Wall Street Journal, there are bugs in the Intel patch. They're not security issues, but they're causing unforeseen performance problems. To quote the Wall Street Journal article, Intel advises consumers to use firmware updates available from their computer makers, but is also advising computer makers and cloud providers to hold off from using Intel firmware updates. The logic is because Intel processors are so widely used, there could be unforeseen business use cases that the company just wasn't aware of that a patch could break or dramatically impact. Outside of Intel, there were reports that AMD processors were not impacted by these two vulnerabilities. Well, that is true with Meltdown. Apparently, the AMD processors could be impacted by Spectre. AMD has now started issuing their own firmware updates to address the Spectre issue. I suppose the good news is AMD's Radeon GPU, those chips are not impacted by either issue because they don't use speculative execution. So while AMD is issuing patches for Spectre, Microsoft also started patching AMD processors within Microsoft Windows. And in some older systems, circa 2009, which people may still be using, the Microsoft patch is bricking computers. So while there aren't security issues with AMD, there are still vulnerabilities that have to be patched. Intel is still patching, and what does that mean for performance? Not good news. The Verge article that I mentioned earlier, with some of the conversations that they were having with computer specialists, they were seeing a 17% reduction in CPU performance. Intel is publicly saying that there will be performance impact, but they're saying it caps out at 8%. So if the Verge article is right, that is more than double what Intel is publicly stating. And that leads to a very tricky conversation. If you're an individual or company that relies on very fast processors and are currently relying upon computers that are performing at a certain level, and now those computers could potentially drop anywhere from 8 to 16% in performance, does that performance degradation force you to have to go out and buy a better processor? A better processor that is likely Intel's, and a processor that most likely is also impacted by this issue, you're just buying a faster model. Over the last few months, I've been thinking about buying a faster processor for my home-built machine, and I currently use Intel, so I was looking at some of their newer processors. I'm actually holding off right now. I don't want to spend money for a premium processor and know out of the gate that I'm taking a 10% performance hit. I really feel like Intel has to address this, either through a price drop or a credit. I also think that if you recently purchased a processor, there should be some compensation for that, because you likely based that decision on certain benchmarks that are no longer relevant. This is a complex topic, and I personally don't see an easy resolution here. This is going to take months to address, and I think the only true fix is a tear down and redesign of processors and chipsets to ensure that this flaw doesn't exist within the kernel. And I suspect a redesign of that caliber will take at least a year, if not more. To personal and home consumers, if you're listening to this and you have an older machine, there's a very good chance that you're not even going to get a security update. So while you don't have to worry about the performance issues, your computer will be permanently vulnerable to this particular problem. For corporate consumers, especially if you're on the cloud, especially if you are buying cloud services by CPU and process cycle, you really have to pay attention to what this is doing to your bottom line. And you have to go back to the start of the summer, especially if you're using Google. And I suspect Amazon figured it out within a few weeks after Google did. So if you saw a small uptick in your prices in the summer, but not considerably more traffic, this could be a root cause. It's something to consider. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news and the creator of more work, but I hope this information is useful and helps you avoid any potential computer risk in the future.
And that's all we have for this week. You can find Sportscast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sportscast is recorded in bucolic Mandarin, New Jersey, and it's produced by my dad. The outro is performed by me, Ben Lombardi, and music is provided by Patrick Lee. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.